This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Scott Miller is the superintendent of the school district in Lake County's largest community, the school city of Hammond. In fact, it's one of the largest school districts in Northwest Indiana. And they, too, have a plan for being able to reopen, for get their students in classes this fall, depending on, I guess, on how a lot of factors, a lot of caveats that are to this. Let's find out more from Superintendent Scott Miller. And thanks for joining us in the program today.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. Well,
bring us up to date with what you and the school board members have talked about, and certainly in the last few weeks, a lot of the discussions that led up to the plan to be able to reopen schools this coming fall semester have, of course, a lot to do with health and the health and safety, of course, of the young people coming in.
They sure do, and of course, you know, School City of Hammond employs over 2,000 staff members as well, and we certainly have their best interest in mind when we're talking about a plan. We started in earnest in planning for reentry in June. And if you recall, in June, many of the transmission rates were on the decline. And so we did put a lot of effort into thinking that this was going to be a reality for us to be able to get back into school. So how could we best plan for opening our buildings, keeping students and staff safe, and minimizing the chance of any transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the past week or two, my personal opinion is that, you know, people started to get a little comfortable, perhaps at 4th of July and other things. They weren't doing their social distancing or wearing masks, and we saw a big uptake. Now it's even higher than it was when we canceled school for the spring semester. So we are, of course, looking at what's going to be best and safest for our kids. So we developed really a framework more than a plan that could be applied to whatever situation was warranted. So we have a similar to like a green, yellow, red. A green is where students could come into the building. A yellow is a hybrid schedule where maybe students are coming 2 days a week instead of all five. And a red level would be a full-time e-learning scenario. A little bit different than the spring in that we would actually be teaching the entire class through the online, not just doing remediation of existing knowledge and learning.
Mm-hmm. How did the classes during the spring, when you had to shift from closing up the schools and buildings in general to going to completely e-learning, how did that seem to go?
So we surveyed both the parents, the students, and our teachers on it, and overall, the feedback we had was positive, and people were very grateful for how quickly we were able to respond to those situations. But there were challenges, to be sure. You know, providing devices and internet access to everyone, sometimes that's referred to as a digital divide.
Yeah.
That is a reality here in Hammond for some of our families. We're better prepared for that now for the fall. We've ordered tons more hotspots and devices so that kids don't have to share with their brother and sister, and we're moving forward with all of that. And, of course, we had issues with supervision of kids. Not every parent was ordered to stay home in the spring. We had, you know, grandparents watching kids. We had kids going to sitters and trying to make sure they were progressing on what we were doing. And it's only going to, that situation is not going to get any better in the fall, where the expectations for e-learning are even greater than they were in the spring.
Do you find that the parents seem to be supportive, at least for now? I know that you had a recent survey done. What's come about from the survey? How do they feel about classes resuming this fall, whether it's e-learning or whether it's in-person classes?
So we did our survey. Some of the other school systems did their survey in late June, and I think you saw numbers like 85% intending to return. We did ours, so it finished just a week ago, and we saw 50-50, basically about half of our parents wanting a full-time e-learning option and the other half of the parents wanting kids to come back. And I attribute that to the timing of the survey, in that the transmission rates had gone up in mid-July versus late June. And some of the other school systems are now resurveying and finding similar types of numbers where half or even more sometimes want to do the full-time e-learning.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that though it may turn out to be where it kind of back off, where some wanted to realize, well, maybe you could go 2 or 3 weeks with e-learning and then shift into back into in-person learning, that they may have to be a little longer than that?
It, the trying to be nimble, of course, is a goal with this, but it also presents incredible challenges to jump from having 12,300 students doing e-learning into right back into the classroom, like let's say over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge logistical challenge. So if there was something like that where we had to transition in a short amount of time, I would want to phase it in, like maybe one grade reporting a day for a week or something like that,
yeah,
so we can make sure everything runs smoothly. Having everybody show up at one time to begin with would, in my opinion, would not be wise. But we know the best place for kids is in the school building. They get so many other benefits. Besides just the learning and the socialization, you know, we offer social-emotional learning. We offer performing arts. We have extracurriculars and athletics. All of these things, they really make the school meet the needs of all kinds of students.
Now,
not
I know,
perfectly, but we really try.
Now, I know right now that you're, at least you're planning within the buildings that students are going to have to wear masks, and I'm sure there's probably going to have to be some control over how they can pass through the halls during breaks or for that matter, you know, passing periods in general. And I know that even field trips and assemblies are going to be very, very strongly watched as well. I know some even are canceled for now. Isn't that right still?
Yeah, everything you just said, yes, there'll be directional passing in the high school buildings where basically students are moving in the same direction to get to where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely going to reinforce with them, you know, we're not going to be congregating at lockers or things like that. We're just going to go from point A to point B. Right now, without central office approval, all field trips and large gatherings in the school, like in the auditoriums, are currently canceled. So unless they had special approval from us.
Now, let me ask you, since you have so many school buildings, and particularly the elementary mm-hmm. schools that have youngsters that are taking a choir or some kind of band, especially in high school, how are you handling the choir and the band classes if it's a case where you mean with the pandemic still underway?
Yeah, you know, by the nature of singing, you're singing, one of your main voices comes from your diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I've heard, I just was on a call on Friday with a doctor who specializes with infectious diseases. And basically, we're not going to be holding those classes in that way, in the traditional sense, where students are lined up side by, you know, shoulder to shoulder with each other to sing. So we're on top of that. It's going to, choir and band are going to look a little different for the time being, but we're not going to do anything to risk kids.
We're talking with Scott Miller. He's the superintendent of the school city of Hammond about the guidelines that they have set up internally to be able to, in the hopes of opening up schools again for classes sometime, with hope, in the fall semester of 2020 into 2021. And Superintendent Miller, what kind of work has had to be done to all of the school buildings, from the high schools all the way down to the elementary schools, to get them physically ready for all of what's about to be happening here if they do get to go back to school?
Sure. Well, we've removed excess furniture from a lot of the classrooms to maximize some of the space in the classrooms for social distancing, including PCs. We used to have, you know, like the traditional PC. Well, now that we have Chromebooks in for all the kids, we don't really need that classroom space anymore, so we've been able to pull those out. And definitely we've actually always had a deep cleaning protocol. You know, the kids haven't been in the building since March 10th, so we have had the time to go through and really clean all of our facilities. Based on the Health Department guidelines and the Department of Education, we have identified a spot in each of the buildings where if a person is suspected of being sick, that it's basically an area for them to go sit and wait for their parents to come get them, if a nurse determines a student is like that, just to keep them away from the general population. And then we've looked at all of our entry protocols, you know, what busing is going to look like. All kids, if they're going to use a bus, they're going to be required to wear the mask the entire time. What does it look like if we suspect a kid is sick or exhibiting symptoms? So we've revised all those protocols, and we think the plan can work, but obviously we are sensitive to what's going on in the community, and if the rates are in the community are that high, you know, children sometimes can be asymptomatic. They can be carriers and not know it. So if things are going too crazy in the general community, I'm not going to force the issue as a superintendent. If I could, though, you know, part of my heart in this is, too, that I do know that not offering an in-person option presents a lot of hardship for a lot of families, too. Mm-hmm. Unlike the spring, where many people were paid to stay home, they got increased unemployment benefits, they got a federal stimulus check, all those things are likely not going to be true come the fall. And we have parents who need to go to work. And I resist saying that school is something just like childcare, because we're so much more than that. We provide an education, but we do take care of your kids so people mm-hmm. can go to work. And if we cancel school for all 12,300 students, then, you know, many of them, the scenario they're going to end up in is in a personal daycare, maybe with a grandparent who is supposed to be responsible for a full day of e-learning. It's not going to be ideal situations for our kids by any means. So in my perfect scenario, we're providing e-learning for the students and the majority of students who can use that, but we still have some way to meet the needs of some of our most vulnerable population.
Now, Superintendent Miller, I know that this has come along long before the pandemic finally hit and forced the closings of schools, but I know that the school city of Hammond's had to deal with issues involving safe water, in particular mm-hmm. with some lead contamination. Did this opportunity to do the deep cleaning and having to run fountains and shut off the fountains, I guess basically the youngsters won't be able to use the hallway fountains, at least for now, has this helped kind of deal with some of those issues in addition?
Well, to be honest, you know, the directive we got was that no public water fountains. So yeah. They were all shut off, and we're going to be providing bottled water for kids. You know, we're looking at refilling, touchless refilling stations as well for kids who want to, you know, bring in their own water bottle. But as far as remediating fixtures, that's been an ongoing process since that was started. Some of the remediation has been actually pretty simple. It's like end of line type of remediation where right. We just needed to replace the fixture, and we didn't like have to go through the walls and replace the entire line. Mm-hmm. But there are some of our older buildings where true remediation would require substantial construction or deconstruction to get access and replace water lines.
That's going to be an issue that's going to be ongoing, to be sure. Even though the pandemic shut things down physically for a while, you still have all that to deal with, too. And it'll continue on, to be sure. It sounds like, to be sure. Well, Superintendent Miller, thank you for spending time with us. As I know, your assistant superintendent, Dawn Green, told the Times that this is a case where it's a new reality for all of us. We've never had a virus like this before, and I'm sure you're very much in agreement. So we're all going to see what happens and just carry out the plans such as they are the best we can.
I would appreciate very much your thoughts and prayers on this issue. My leadership team and myself, we're definitely trying to navigate all this, and it is uncharted waters. We want to meet the needs of our community. We want to meet the needs of our teachers and staff, and finding where that sweet spot is, mm-hmm. For lack of a better word, is proving challenging because, you know, there's a lot of teachers who don't feel safe in coming back, and I respect that. But we try to figure it out, and hopefully whatever situation we come up with, it's not too bad for everybody involved.
Scott Miller is the superintendent of the School City of Hammond, and Superintendent Miller, thank you for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. More than half of Indiana nonprofits curtailed or they suspended programs because of the pandemic. And there is a new $20 million Youth Program Resilience Fund that hopes to be able to help youth that have lost their mentors, their coaches, their caretakers, people that they would have had in those programs had they been able to participate. And Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman is with us to talk more about this program that has been launched. launched by the Lilly Endowment. And Tammy, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
My pleasure. Always good to be with you, Chris.
Well, we always have concerns about young people that don't have their mentors or their coaches or even caretakers that are out there to help them, especially if they're young people that are having problems. And in particular, we know that this has been a very, very, very difficult time. There's some very sad statistics. I guess the report is called Indiana Nonprofits and COVID-19. And talks more about the impact on them. Will you give us some sobering statistics out of that report that we should know about and how it fits in together with what the Lilly Endowment wants to do?
Yes. And so, yes, thank you. Perfect introduction. You know, I think the reality is we know that so many entities have been negatively impacted by COVID-19. And this new research that comes out of both the Lilly School of Philanthropy as well as the State Association of United Ways, really looked at just what you said. 71% of Indiana nonprofits have lost revenues since March 1st. Obviously, that's connected to their ability to provide services. So they've also over half have suspended or reduced their programming. Many of them have been forced to operate ongoing programs with that limited capacity, so maybe they can't do them as fully as they would like to. And many of them, sometimes this is a positive, many of them have been able, 69%, to shift to online or phone platforms. And yet we know that kids need that connectivity. They need those caring adults, and they need that network. And so, while virtual, we're all doing the best we can, and some people have done some really creative, amazing things, at the same time, we want these programs to be available and to be able to serve our kids going forward.
Now, tell us what the Lilly Endowment has introduced here, this Youth Program Resilience Fund. Tell us more about it and how it's coming along. What's the timetable for the fund, too, by the way?
Yes, it's super quick. And so, one of the exciting things is Lilly Endowment really understood how many, they've been serving youth serving programs across the state for a long time, and they've been listening really intently the last few weeks and understood that a lot of youth serving programs either have had to expend some extra funds that they didn't anticipate or will have to very shortly. And so they have designated up to $20 million to help youth serving organizations address those COVID-19 challenges. And so it just was announced this week, and the applications are, it's called a request for information. So we don't want it to sound like, they don't want it to sound like a big proposal. It's a request for information. They want youth serving orgs to tell them how this has impacted them.
Mm-hmm.
And the deadline date is August 10th. So that's quick. But IYI is providing some workshops, which can hopefully help.
I was going to say that the workshop is going to be the key, I think, to help organizations that want to take advantage of the funding to be able to maybe not necessarily get back on their feet, but to get them back closer to normal, whichever normal happens to be these days.
Right. And again, so the workshops are going to start Wednesday, in fact, and there will be two the following week. And those details are going to be on our website at IYI.org. And again, it's not a big proposal kind of thing. You often think of big grant proposals, that it's really this request for information. Tell us your story as a nonprofit organization. What has been the reality that you faced during COVID-19, and then associating some expenses that are connected to that so that you can apply for these funds?
Difficult has it been for many of the nonprofits that you get to stay in touch with to try to deal with this? I know many of them are out there. They're doing what they can with what they have to work with, but it still isn't very much, I guess.
Yes. Well, they've been, like I said, just some of the creativity has been fantastic. I know I was talking to the Girl Scouts, one of the Girl Scout service areas not too long ago, and they were saying obviously they've been able to do some things that maybe they couldn't before. They were able to do a virtual session with a NASA astronaut so the girls could get a badge, right? That's not normally what they can do in Southern Indiana. And so they've had some cool things, and yet, again, it's really that one-to-one engagement. So making sure that it's not just a YouTube video or a webinar that kids sit and watch on a screen, but that we're engaging with them. The kids need that adult engagement, and they need peer engagement. So I think that's people are working through it, and programs are working through it, and we're going to see some of them go back, and some of them have. Some of the camps have gone back in person, but obviously there's a lot associated with that as far as social distancing and extra cleaning that they're just doing heroic work with. And again, I hope that every youth serving org in your listening area will consider, you know, telling that story and then applying to see if they can get some of those expenses covered by applying to this fund.
If they need help in that storytelling, is that what part of the information they'll get from the workshop? So we'll bring
you
on?
Betcha. Yeah. You betcha. We're going to do the first one Wednesday is an overview of kind of the whole request for information, but then there will be one workshop precisely on telling your COVID-19 impact story.
Now, if you want to find out more about the workshops coming up, you go online to iyi.org/events, and all the information is there. Is that where you can sign up if there's a particular workshop day that you're able to participate in and watch
it? Yeah. You bet. And you can attend all of them or none of them. They're all free. And, you know, we're also going to have some takeaway information guides if the workshops don't work as well.
Have the folks at the Lilly Endowment, obviously they have the report, which is, as we mentioned earlier, it's pretty sobering with the statistics that are out there. Have they been aware and you've kept them up to date all along about the problems?
Oh, you bet. We've engaged many, many times talking to them, as they've engaged with a lot of other organizations as well. So I think they have a really good level of visibility into some of the challenges. But again, we're all looking forward to making sure we're hearing all the stories. One of the important things to note here, too, mm-hmm. is that for this new initiative, actually government entities and schools are not eligible. But if you are a program that is an after-school, you know, there's a lot of after-school programs that work with schools, they are eligible. And if you are a faith-based organization that has a youth program, you are eligible, right?
Oh.
So think that through, and hopefully, again, we want to hear all those stories, and we want to see, you know, hopefully this fund's going to look to see how it might be able to help.
Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, and the IYI, working along with the Lilly Endowment, is a Lilly Endowment project, primarily a $20 million Youth Program Resilience Fund that's been established to help young people who've lost mentors and coaches and caretakers be able to get the help in the programs that the nonprofits are involved in to help get those youngsters back as the pandemic continues. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Merrillville Community School Corporation has come up with a reentry plan in efforts to keep kids safe while attending school in person amid the coronavirus pandemic. Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson spoke last week with Superintendent Nick Brown about the plan. He talks about how the plan was conceived.
Staff members at all different levels working together. Ran it through some of our community groups. I have a faith-based leadership group and a PTO president's group and a superintendent's advisory group. And so as we were working on that, ran it through those groups to get some feedback from parents and community members on what they thought of it. So we've had a nice process, very well thought out. June 30th, we had a Google Meets meeting or a Zoom meeting with about 54 people, including the folks around the committee and others that were invited in to review it, sort of a last chance to sort of vet it out. So this has been put together over that period of time with some very careful consideration to make sure that we're keeping our students and our staff and visitors to the building safe. It's probably very similar to other plans that I've seen that are coming out about this time. We're real pleased with it. We're excited that we think it's got some good components. I'm more than happy to share those components with you right now, if that's what you like.
Please
okay.
do.
So I think there are a couple of pieces that are very important to our parents. First of all, Merrillville Community Schools are going to offer two options. You can send your students back to school in that traditional five-day-a-week, what we call brick-and-mortar in the building, and we look forward to having your children back. Or they can make a decision to continue with a distance learning plan. And the distance learning plan would be for those that are uncomfortable or feel their child has a medical reason that they don't want them to come back in to be close proximity. That actual distance learning plan program is under development with our professional staff right now. It will be slightly different than our e-learning plan that was occurring last year when we closed on the 16th 18th of March. You know, we announced it on the 13th, and nobody was coming back after that. This one will be more rigorous. It's aligned more closely to the standards. Our goal is that the students that are doing the distance learning are getting the same Indiana standards, the same instruction, the same expectations for learning and knowledge. Our staff have the same expectations of engaging with our students, that there will be instructional components and some time to help the child. They will receive grades as if just the same as students will be in the classroom, with the whole goal that at some point we hope this issue is resolved and that those students will be migrating back into the classroom with us, and they'll be in the same location as the students that are in the building in their learning continuum. So if you're a third grade student and you do distance learning, when you come back and your family feels comfortable to have you come back and join us in the building, you'll be in the same location as the third graders that were in the building learning at the same time. So we're hoping that providing that service for our family provides them with a choice that they can make. We will be sending out a survey and asking folks to fill it out and return it to us by the 24th. That survey basically asks, are you wanting to do distance learning, or do you want to do the traditional? Because we need to get a sense of somewhat of an enrollment. How many kids would be at home? How many kids will be in the building? That has staffing implications, have programming implications. We will also be asking parents on that survey, will they be using bus service? The buses, when you ride a bus, you will be assigned a seat and you will be required to wear a mask when on the bus. And so we're trying to get a sense of how many people might be riding the bus. We've made additional plans in all the buildings for additional increased amount of traffic. We think more folks will be bringing their children to school and dropping them off as opposed to riding the bus. But we are asking, please register and let us know if you're going to be riding the bus or not. And then that way helps us with our routing, but it also helps us make plans on how many kids might be dropped off and what the capacity of that bus would be, and let us space kids out if possible. So as you can see, just to recap, the first part is parents will have a choice for traditional, come to school, or a distance learning, and they'll get more information on that distance learning, and they will be asked through a survey to let us know which way they want to do their programming so we can make some decisions. The other component that's important for our plan is all our students, staff, and teachers will be required to have a mask with them at all times. There will be times that they will be required to wear a mask riding the bus, when there's movement in the hallway, walking around, when social distancing is not available due to the programming that's being provided. If a teacher's working with a child, both the teacher and the child would need to have their masks on. And so there will be times that they are required to wear masks during the day. There will be times that are built in that they will not be required to wear masks. When they're in the classroom and all the seats are, we're working to have all the chairs facing forward, all the desks facing forward. We're in the classroom, all the chairs are facing forward, and the teacher is instructing from the front of the room. The students will be allowed to take their masks off as long as they're not working with each other or talking with each other on something. The minute they need to start to work with each other, and our teachers do such a great job of having kids working together, they would have to put their masks back on. So the mask question is important for folks to know, that they will have to have one with them at all times, and there will be times that they can have them off. When you're at lunch, you're going to have it off. When the social distancing is available, or physical distancing, and when they're, like I said, everybody's sitting facing forward and the teacher's instructing, those types of things will be available. Our plan is on the web page. We drafted it as a working draft because it is a living document. We will adjust it as we learn more, get more information. We're working very closely with the Lake County Department of Health, the CDC, our teachers, and everybody that needs to be involved to make sure we're safe. Water fountains, one of the things people have asked, our water fountains will be turned off, but there will be water refilling stations. Our lunch service will be adjusted. We are reducing the capacity of the cafeterias. So what happens is there will be fewer students sitting at the tables to give spacing. Some students will be eating in classrooms with their teachers or somebody supervising them. Some students might be eating, like at the middle school, we can open up a movable wall and students can eat in part of the gym and increase the amount of space. So we're providing spacing. Students will be cohorted together as much as possible. At the elementary, it's much easier. If you're in Mr. Brown's fourth grade class, you're only going to be with Mr. Brown's fourth grade class. We're not going to mix the classrooms together. They're not going to be on the playground together. They will eat as a class in the cafeteria or in the classroom together. So limiting the student interactions as much as possible. They'll walk down the halls in the group. We'll try to create some signage in the hallway so folks know to walk in certain directions at certain times to just give space. We understand that the masks and the space and the continual additional cleanings will be there. Our buildings will be cleaned. High-touch areas will be cleaned throughout the day constantly. There will be deep cleaning each evening. Buses are cleaned before and after each route. Visitors, we're not allowing visitors unless it's an appointment where, you know, parent can make an appointment to come in. If a visitor comes to the building, they will have to be temperature checked, hand sanitized, and wear a mask before they have access into the building. And then we would also ask them to hand sanitize before they reach for the door when they're leaving. We won't be doing field trips until further notice. We also won't be accepting outside field trips. Maryville is a wonderful district that has a planetarium that will not be available to outside districts. We'll only be using it for our students. And it will be adjusted slightly again. So we want the Mr. Brown's fourth grade class will get a chance to go to the planetarium, but they won't go with two or three other classes at the same time as they had in the past. So it gives us some more distancing and some spacing. We are looking at considerations for attendance. I know that many places we have like perfect attendance awards, things that we're going to kind of suspend some of those. If you're not feeling well, we have outlined on the plan what the CDC recommends are some of the symptoms. But if you have those, we ask you to stay home. If we have a staff member that has those, we ask you to stay home. We have clear protocols from the Lake County Department of Health and CDC on if you're tested and you're positive, what the protocols will be. All of those will be available for parents on the website. They'll be communicated. Our students and staff will be educated on how to wear a mask, how to appropriately clean your hands. There'll be additional hand sanitizers available for folks in the buildings. The other thing we're doing is we're not sharing materials like you consider in an elementary. You go to art room, you have shared art supplies. We're asking that each person will have their own art supplies stored in their own bag or art box. That type of practice will continue in other classes as well. We will do the best we can at the high school for shared materials, but some of our courses, such as the welding, things of that sort, they have to have some shared materials, but those will be cleaned in between. We'll have extra cleaning on computers that are shared or used by students, and so we'll continue with that those practices to make those as safe as possible. We're excited. We think it's a good plan, and we think that we can maintain a good, safe environment, and we're very pleased to offer the two choices and appreciate the board's support on offering the two choices of you can come or you can continue distance learning. The distance learning details will come out probably closer to August so people can see kind of how that's working. We really need to see the information back from that survey from parents on who's coming so we can then program and staff it appropriately. Those are basically the highlights that we have at this point. I think I've covered most of that. There is we sent out to our parents today, but there is a one-page flyer that covers the highlights, and then there is an executive summary that covers that. And then the actual document, which is about 45 pages, is on the webpage via a link. I'm currently working on questions and answers, working out what I think people may have a question about this and what the answer will be. That should be up and ready for our community probably Monday. We'll get it finalized here shortly. And then there is a link for folks to send in questions. And when they send in a question, they'll get a response to go and look on the frequently asked question piece in about 48 hours to see their response. We'll try to answer as many of those as we can, and then we may individually answer a question that might be specific for a particular student. If somebody asks about their child and their specific situation, we would not put that up on there. We'd reach out to them or have somebody reach out to them and give them an answer. But that's kind of where we're at.
That's very comprehensive. I really appreciate all the information. Is there going to be a cap on the number of students that you're going to allow back into the physical school?
No, that's going to be a choice of the parents, and we will accommodate and meet those. We do, when you mentioned that, would we put a cap? No, we wouldn't. We would take advantage of if we have a number of folks do the distance learning, and that means we can spread our students out within that grade level in that building or a particular class in that building and reduce the number of students to teacher. We'll take advantage of that. And the one piece I forgot to mention was we are also not allowing outside groups to use the building at this time. So let's say somebody had a community group, their neighborhood group, and they wanted to meet. Many times we try to accommodate that, but at this point we're not going to accommodate those requests just so we can make sure we have time to appropriately clean the buildings in between each day's use.
What are you going to do if everybody chooses to distance learn and nobody chooses to come back to school? I mean, I know that's probably unlikely, but just, you know, hypothetically.
that, that,
That would be a big surprise. I do think we'll have a percentage that select the district distance learning. We will address that if that were to occur, if the percentage was higher than we anticipated. It is being provided as an offer to do that. The governor was kind enough to say that if you were doing distance learning due to COVID, that it would be fully funded. There was a question for those that may not know that some distance learning programs are not fully funded by the state, but they did say for schools they would fully fund 100% the ADM for programs that are set up that way. It would be a challenge. We would find some way to do that, but we would meet that challenge and we'd try to honor those requests. On the distance learning, I don't know if I mentioned it, so I'm going to jump in here. One of the things we are letting folks know, if you select the distance learning, it is for that trimester. So, you know, you can't select it this week and then not next week and then go back. When you make the decision for distance learning, you will need to stay with that for the trimester. That is for programming and staffing purposes as we go through that. But people will have an option to come back through the year near the end of the trimester. We'll come back and ask them, do you wish to continue or are you going to come back to the school to the five-day-a-week thing? And that all may change, you know, if something miraculous happens and people get have a better feeling that their children can come back and there's appropriate treatments or vaccines, we will follow through that. But to your original question, we will find a way to solve that problem. I've got a great staff that can pretty much solve anything. I've been really impressed with them. And I got to tell you, I've been so impressed with our community and our parents. Very understanding, very supportive, very interested in what's best for their children, very interested in high expectations for their children's education, but really have been appreciative of folks' patience as we've been putting this together and appreciative of some of those folks in the community that have been helping guide some of that work. So we will make it work and it will be successful.
Are these changes, these social distancing measures and the cleaning measures here to stay?
I think longer than people think. You know, I don't want to commit us that we would do the physical. We're trying to change from social to physical distancing just to send the help the kids understand it's about physical space. But we really think that that social or physical distancing is something that we'll be visiting, even if, like I said, there's a green light and everybody's starting to come back, just to help provide another layer. I think it will be with us at least this year, and then next, not necessarily the virus, but those practices. I think those practices may fall over into next year, and we will be changing what we do in education, I think, because of this. I do think there'll be more hand sanitizing and hand cleaning, which is an excellent practice anyway. I do think that social physical distancing will occur, especially between cohort groups of kids. Like if you're bringing one class in for lunch, the next class might stand 6 feet away before they go through. So I think some of that possibly will continue. I do think it will be this whole year, but I even think just our normal practices will slightly adjust. We're just more cognizant of the ability of something like a virus to spread, and so we'll be more cognizant of and understand how our hand-washing protocols and our social distancing and things of that sort actually help a great deal keep us all safe. So I do think there'll be some of that will stay with us.
That's Maryville Community Schools Superintendent Nick Brown speaking with Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Tomorrow we hope to hear more about the new projects that are being planned by the South Shore Line, the improvements along the way. That's all coming up on Tuesday's Regionally Speaking.